Welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Benno. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We are going to cover three different teams today, so a lot on our plate. We'll get to Auburn, Virginia Tech, as well as the University of Washington. We're going to hit on all of their notable prospects with three special guests, so that'll be coming up shortly. However, yesterday was the first day in which the Giants came back to the facility. They reported for the start of the off-season workout program. It's a 9-week workout program. This is phase one, Paul, and it's important to highlight, once again, in the CBA, it is a voluntary period of time.
Indeed it is. And not only is it voluntary, it's also very carefully regulated by the CBA. We are strictly talking about strength and conditioning stuff. None of the actual position coaches are allowed to go out with the players onto the field during this time frame. So, you know, yes, they can chat. Yes, they can hand the materials, but no, they can't take them out between the lines.
Yes, a lot of it is basically working out in the weight room, building up your conditioning and your strength. I mean, that's really what the first phase of the program is mostly about.
Yes, giving the guys physicals, making sure that during the time away they didn't do anything so funky that they're so much out of conditioning and so much out of shape. You want to make sure that they were somewhere within the boundaries of good taste and semblance of conditioning. But that's what this is all about right now. And we'll see, you know, over the course of time as they start getting onto the field, what we can look at on the field. But that's not today.
Things will slowly grow over the course of time with respect to the off-season workout program. All right, we'll get to more on that in a little bit. Right now, we're going to turn our attention to the prospects from Auburn who will be drafted later this month. And we are joined right now by a very special guest, and that is former Auburn quarterback, former Giants backup quarterback, Stan White, who is the radio analyst for the Auburn Radio Network. Stan, you got Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Oh, my pleasure, guys. Things are great down here. How are you guys?
I'll tell you what, Stan, the CBA and everything the way it works now in the springtime, nothing like when you were here at the Meadowlands, trust me.
Yeah, we were just getting ready for off-season programs and workouts, and it's changed a little bit over the last 20 years, but still I keep up with my Giants and really a huge fan and try to get up there as much as I can.
Absolutely, yeah. The CBA got a little thicker over the course of time over the last few decades. Well, let's start with the Auburn prospects, and the one of note is Carlton Davis, the cornerback who's got good size, good athleticism. The one thing that jumps out to me, Stan, is when you look at his interception numbers over the course of his career, that does not jump off the page. And normally, NFL scouts, they get enamored with, well, are the interceptions up there? Is there any particular reason that's jumped out to you why his INT numbers weren't very high over the course of his collegiate career?
Well, yeah, the one thing that they asked Carlton to do was play a lot more man-to-man coverage, and he's a long-rangey corner, and that's what, you know, NFL scouts and teams like now is the long-rangey guy. He's also a very physical guy. He's a very, very good run stopper, and he closes on, you know, the outside contained pretty well. But the one thing that I noticed over the course of his career is he was asked to kind of be on an island a lot of times. Even though he played some boundary corner, some more physical corner, he was also asked to play some man-to-man a lot of times on deep routes. So usually when you have the man-to-man coverage, you're not going to get as many picks. Zone requires you or allows you to see the quarterback and see the eyes as opposed to straight man. So I would attribute it to that as much as anything.
Another guy who I think is going to see a lot of attention, maybe in the second round, at least that's some of the stuff that I've heard, is Kerryon Johnson, who in a lot of running back circles, when you hear about some of the guys who are going to be right behind Barkley in that second level of backs, he seems to get lost. And I don't hear a lot of headlines about him, but then people who know a lot about football say you better keep an eye on him.
Yeah, and that's the one thing. He's not one of those guys that's going to awe you with a 40 time. You know, he's not a real flashy type player. He's a bit taller. He's probably 6'1", close to 6'2". And so usually the running backs of today's era is going to be more of a 5'10", 6-foot type guy. But he's got really good hands. He can be a receiver out of the backfield. I don't see Kerryon being a 30-carry type of guy in a game. I mean, he's going to touch the ball maybe 10, 12, 14 times, maybe as a third-down back. What really impressed me this year is that his pass blocking ability. I mean, he was really able to protect Jarrett Stidham on the backside a lot of times, and he was put in a lot of situations, especially against the Nick Saban style defenses, where he was a one-on-one against a buck end or an outside linebacker, and he held his own. And so that's one thing that I think that he has improved on dramatically. He's a good running back. He's a shifty running back. He's got some power. He's got some speed, but he's not going to outrun anyone, so to speak. But he's got really, really good hands, and he's just a headsy football player. So whoever gets him, whether it be a first day, second day, or whatever, they're going to get a good player.
Lance, how did I know the quarterback would love the running back's pass protection?
Yes, well.
Just a wild guess, Dan.
Exactly.
You know, one of the things that I noticed, and you alluded to this, Dan, when I've seen him on film, is, you know, he's got that power where, I mean, he's run over some defenders. Is he more of a downhill guy, or does he have the versatility that he's got some shiftiness to him that he can be utilized on the outside as well?
You know, I see Kerryon, and this is by no comparison a Le'Veon Bell by any means, so don't take it that way. But he's got a little bit of that patient shiftiness, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
He gets to the line of scrimmage, and he's just kind of a patient lateral, and then he'll pick a hole, and he'll bust through it, and he's got enough speed to get a couple extra yards. So, you know, by no means is he in the shadow of Le'Veon Bell, but if I had to compare him to an existing running back, I would say he's got a little bit of that shiftiness about him, but he's also got some power to fold ahead. And so, you know, he played in Auburn's system. He played some wildcat at the quarterback situation down in short yardage, and he made he completed a couple of passes out of it in short yardage as well. So, you know, he's just a smart ball player. You're going to get a great effort from him every time. He battled some injuries throughout his career, but most of them actually going to get nicked up, and especially in this conference. So, I'm looking forward to seeing his career, because he could be a really good and contributing special teams player, third down back. I don't see him being a 25-carry-a-game type of guy. I just don't see that out of him. And maybe I'm wrong, but I think he can really be a good player in the NFL.
I got another guy who really interests me a lot, Stan. He's going to be important to a running game wherever he winds up going. That's Braden Smith, the offensive lineman. Now, I look at the measurables, 6'6", 315. A lot of people say, well, 6'6", for a guard in the NFL, that's a little too tall. They want them to be a little bit more of a fire plug, you know, shorter and stouter. What are your thoughts about his possibilities as he comes up to the pro ranks?
You know, the one thing that I've liked about Braden Smith since he stepped foot in Auburn is he's kind of that nasty guy. I mean, you're not going to outwork him. He's going to be in the gym. He doesn't carry a lot of body fat. I mean, this is a guy you're never going to have to worry about him reporting to camp at 340. He's really, really into staying in shape. He's light on his feet, so to speak, for a 6'6", 310, 315-pound guy. And he can get out in space, and he can pull. But what I love about him that he brings to the game is he's got grit about him. He's a mean guy. I mean, he's going to get after you. He's not going to get put on his back very many times. And if he gets beat on a rush, you know, he's not going to let it happen again. So you got to have those guys, those bell cows up front that have a little bit of nastiness about them. And he's one of those guys.
Talking with Stan White, former Auburn Giants quarterback, radio analyst for the Auburn Radio Network. On the flip side, a guy that they're going to have to maybe contain the offensive line in terms of pass rushing ability is the edge rusher Jeff Holland. And, you know, he seems to be a little raw. Numbers jump off the page at times. You know, what have you seen out of him where maybe he could be a more consistent player at the NFL level?
You know, selfishly, guys, I wish he would have stayed one more year at Auburn. Obviously, he had a really impact year this year. And you know, I'm no scout or anything. He may have benefited one more year, maybe jumping into that first round area, because this is a guy who jumped off the charts. So his numbers were not all that spectacular at all up until last year. And he really, really came on. And, of course, he replaced a Carl Lawson, who's having a good career. It had a good rookie year last year. And so this is a guy who really can be an impact player. But, you know, he really jumped off the charts as a pass rusher. And I think a lot of it has to do with he learned how to use his hands a lot more, getting off those tackles and really setting the edge pretty good. And so, you know, this is a guy that really, if you look at his numbers, I mean, he had as good a numbers as any rush guy in the SEC, maybe the country. And, And I think he's going to be an impact player. I don't know if he'll come in to be an, you know, all NFL rookie right away, but he's certainly got a chance to be a very good player.
Stan, how is he in terms of stopping the run? Because as you mentioned, you know, when anybody looks at him, they think pass rush guy that gets to the quarterback, but does he have the versatility to be a guy that could stay on the field for all three downs?
Well, that's the one thing he's going to have to develop into. I think he can be. He was at Auburn. And he's got a little weight on him. He can put on some weight and still maintain that speed. But that's one area he's going to have to really, at the next level, shore his game up on, is being able to take on those big tackles or those fullbacks and get off of that and be a run plugger as well, because he improved his rush game on the pass dramatically last year. And he was a good run stopper as well, but that's one area that he's going to have to continue to work on his game at the NFL level.
So when he comes up to the pro stand, do you see him as an inside 3-4 guy?
Now, I see him as a versatile guy. I think that he can certainly be a third down rush guy, but he can play in space. He wasn't asked to drop back very much last year in his career into space on passing situations. But I think he could be an inside guy if need be, especially on third and long situation when you need maybe not a 270-pound, double-team type guy where you can try to get some press down on the pocket and maybe collapse the pocket.
One of the other guys who's getting a lot of attention is the kicker down there, Daniel Carlson, who a lot of folks think could be even potentially maybe sneaking to the end of the second day. I don't know. That may be a little high. But you know what? The Giants right now have Aldrick Rosas going into his second season. They're certainly looking for competition there. What are your thoughts about Carlson as he enters the pro ranks?
Well, I tell you, I personally have not seen a better kicker in college ball over the last handful of years. Now, the odd thing is he's been a semifinalist for the Groza, mm-hmm. I guess 3 years running,
yeah.
and was, you know, second in command all those years. But this is a guy that's going to give you 60, 70%, maybe 80% touchback ratios. I mean, that's just phenomenal. I mean, he is money outside of 50. The odd thing about it is, guys, is he could be the second best in his family. You know, he's got a younger brother that's going to be the kicker at Auburn this year, and he's already kicked a 62, 64-yarder at Auburn in the spring game. I mean, this is a guy that's going to be a great player. But Daniel Carlson, he doesn't look like him. He's a 6'4", 215-pound kicker, and he's got a big leg, and he's going to consistently put it in the back of the end zone. But, you know, I think that NFL – programs will be amazed at how consistent he can be outside of 50. And that's, you know, that's what you got to be at this level, at the NFL level. You got to be 80-85% inside of 40, mm-hmm. maybe more, 90%, mm-hmm. and then you got to be able to be 70-75 outside of 50. And he's already there. He's a heck of a kicker, and he's going to have a long career in the NFL.
Stan, last one for me. Auburn's got a lot of prospects. Is there anybody else that we haven't brought up that jumps out to you that should perhaps be on the radar of NFL teams? I know they got two safeties in Steven Roberts and Trey Matthews, but anybody else in particular that jumps out to you?
You know, you mentioned Trey Matthews. This is a guy who I think's got a chance to really work his way into it, because this is a guy that started out at Georgia. He transferred to Auburn, was Auburn for 3 years, and he's just a headsy player. He's a big safety. You got to work on his hip movement a little bit on opening up and drop stepping, but he's a very physical safety, and I think he can make a team, not only make a team, be an impact on a team, especially special teams wise. And then Steven Roberts is a little bit undersized guy. He's not as big as Trey Matthews, but he's just got a nose for the ball. So I'm anxious to see where they all go. You kind of nailed it on all those. There may be a few more here and there that's going to get some chances. But I'm really excited to see what those guys could do.
All right, I'm going to tap into your radio booth mentality for just a second. Take me through the conference. Is there one guy who, during the course of Auburn's schedule this past season from the conference, that just stood out to you and said, my goodness, I would pay to watch this guy play any weekend?
Wow, man, that's a really good question. You know, this conference, week in and week out.
I know.
You know, Auburn, look at last
I know.
Year, Auburn played the number one team in the nation in Georgia and beat them. And then they got the reward 2 weeks later of playing the number one team in Alabama and beat them. And then as rewarded off, the very next week they get to go to Atlanta to play possibly in the playoff and play Georgia again. So You know, week in and week out, you know, Georgia's got some really good running backs. I mean, those guys are good players. They've got a young guy that, you know, maybe they're older guys that are coming out of the draft, you know, look like a second-rate guy. Not the second-rate guys. He's just a very, very good player. The young freshman for Georgia is a very good ball player. Alabama's always going to have a lot of top-notch players. They've got a young quarterback that's going to shake things up, obviously, down there that had a heck of a national championship game in the second half. So that's a good problem to have, two quarterbacks battling out that have shown themselves in the spotlight. But, you know, I look at guys like Dan Mullen's going to make a big difference in Florida. Right now, the SEC West, guys, has kind of had the number for the last 2 years. It's been really Alabama and Auburn and then LSU. And then finally Georgia, where Kirby Smart has really shown some waves. And I think Dan Mullen's going to get Florida back there. Will Muschamp, to me, and he's a friend of mine, he's doing a great job up in South Carolina, and he's continuing to build that program. So should be another good year in the SEC. But as far as players go, I know I didn't really answer that. I mean, week in and week out, I'm awed at guys that I see out there making plays and, you know, catching the ball, throwing the ball. I think this year should be a really good year for quarterbacks. Jarrett Stidham at Auburn, I think, is going to have a big year like he did last year. And he'll definitely be a pro prospect one day with a possible, I mean, he's possibly a first-round guy.
Well, I knew it was going to be a tough question because that's fertile ground for football. Let's not kid ourselves. What do you think about the dynamic possibilities of Fitzpatrick, though, out of Alabama? I gotta ask you that before we let you go because I know you guys played them, and let's face it, I mean, right now a lot of folks are thinking he's a potentially top five, top six pick and can play anywhere in the secondary.
I'm sorry, who are you talking about again? Minkah Fitzpatrick?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really, really good player. I mean, what I see about this kid is that, you know, he has a nose for the football. He's a very, very intelligent football player. And I've watched him play, whether it be on TV, some film, or obviously against Auburn, and he has just got a nose for it. He can come off the edge on rushing, on blitzes, on unique complex blitzes. And he can also play in coverage. He can break on the ball. I mean, this guy, he's going to be a very, very good player in the NFL. There's no question.
Stan White, former Auburn and Giants quarterback, radio analyst for the Auburn Radio Network. Stan, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Stan. We appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Go Giants. Take care.
Absolutely. Stan White, once again, weighing in on all the prospects out of Auburn and a number of intriguing players.
It's funny. Stan went to the World League. When he was with the Giants, he was one of those allocated players. I think he was with the London Monarchs.
He was, indeed.
He was battling behind, you know, Dave Brown, Kent Graham. There was Tommy Maddox. There was Danny Cannell there for a little while. That was back in the mid-90s. And Stan was always a really great guy to talk to. But, you know, as the quarterback shuffle was going on, he was always the guy who was like the developmental guy. So when the World League of American Football came into play, he was the guy the Giants sent over there to figure out, okay, let's see if they can help develop him while we're trying to get these other guys to win some games for us.
More reps opportunities.
And yeah. I think he was with the Giants for 3 years?
Four. 94 to 97.
And, you know, and he never got to play. As it turned out, he never got to play. But in any event, a really good guy, and you could hear it in his voice. He's still a Giant at heart and certainly gave us a lot of good information, so we thank him.
And he was on that 1993 undefeated Auburn team as well.
Yeah.
So certainly made a name for himself in college. All right, well, we just covered Auburn. We're now going to switch gears to Virginia Tech. Paul and I earlier today had an opportunity to speak with an opportunity to break down also the Virginia Tech Hokies players. So here is a breakdown of what to expect out of Va Tech moving forward in the 2018 draft. We're continuing to get you set for the upcoming 2018 NFL draft, and we are now turning our attention to the Virginia Tech football prospects. And here to break that down for us is Andy Bitter, who covers the Hokies football team for the Roanoke Times. Andy, you got Lance Meadow, Paul DeTito with you here, Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. How's everything? Appreciate the time.
Everything's going pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with the star player for Virginia Tech, and that is Tremaine Edmonds. And amongst all players that are getting set to be drafted this year, I feel as if his stock has skyrocketed over the last few seasons, specifically entering this year. A lot of people rave about his size, his athleticism. What specifically has jumped out to you about Tremaine Edmonds' play this past season?
Well, I think you look at him and you just kind of marvel that a guy that big can move so effortlessly and as quickly as he can. I mean, he's 6'5", 250 pounds, and he's as fast as any linebacker that I've seen. So to be of that size and be able to move like that, he's not yet 20 years old, I think, or he's right on the borderline of turning 20 years old. He's only, you know, all the Edmonds brothers reclassified when they were coming up through middle school to high school, so they're a year younger than their classmates. You throw that all in there, and I think people look at the potential of this guy and go, man, if you can get him in here this young and he's got that size and that mobility and can teach him a system, you can have a pretty good guy for a long time in the NFL.
Now, as he goes into the pro ranks, do you see him better suited to a 3-4 or a 4-3? A lot of scouts have said to me they think he's going to be an outside linebacker, but let's face it, at 250-something pounds, you know, that's a little big to be an outside guy. A lot of folks want that sturdy body on the inside.
Yeah, I think that's sort of part of the draw of him, too, is he can play both of those spots. I think he's got a pass rushing capability that maybe hasn't been tapped into that much. Virginia Tech had him do a little bit of that, and he got to the quarterback on a couple of occasions, but he wasn't really sort of unleashed as a full-force sort of pass rushing guy. So I think he's got that capability, which is why I think like an outside linebacker type in whatever scheme they want to play him in might be his long-term home. But, you know, talking to some of these draft experts and stuff leading up to this thing, a lot of things I hear about him is, oh, he can play inside or outside. That kind of adds to his value.
How high have you been hearing it in terms of where he may land and what potential teams are interested in him?
You know, I've heard mostly sort of in that 10 to 12 range, I think. I think there's always going to be sort of a limit to how high a linebacker ever goes in the draft. You don't really see those guys going top three or top five all too often. But I think of like Anthony Barr or somebody like that who was in that sort of 8 to 12 range. I forget exactly where he went. But that's what I've seen a lot of. As you know, in the draft, who really knows once it comes down to it? But he doesn't play sort of that premium position like left tackle or quarterback that, you know, teams are going to take in the top five regardless. So I could see him being late top 10 sometime around then.
Does he get bonus points for being what they call a legacy pick because his dad did play in the NFL? He was a tight end with the Dolphins, and so many times we'll hear about that pedigree. Maybe artificially raises a guy a couple of notches, maybe otherwise that he wouldn't be if he wasn't related.
It might. You know, the Edmonds family is an interesting one. I mean, he's got two brothers, too, that are older than him. Trey was an undrafted free agent last year who latched on with the Saints and actually made the team. His other brother, Terrell, is older than him, is also in this draft. Maybe a third or fourth round safety that could go somewhere along there. So this family just seems to know how to do it right. I mean, it wasn't just Farrell, the father, that made it to the NFL. Trey, the older brother, made it when a lot of people didn't think he did. And then they look at Tremaine here and they go, man, this is the most physically talented of the group. I think it's just a family that has their heads on straight and sort of knows how to go about being an athlete and being a professional athlete.
Talking with Andy Bitter, who covers the Virginia Tech football team for the Roanoke Times. Andy, you just brought up his brother Terrell, and I know Terrell, I believe, started off as a corner and then obviously has transformed to a different position. As you've seen and followed his evolution of a player, I mean, what is his strengths and where do you think his ideal best fit is in the NFL?
I would say safety. I think he started out at corners because there was a need there, and then they moved him to free safety and Rover the last couple years, and he added a lot of size, I think. So he's probably bigger than you would want from a cornerback right now, but he has those cover skills from the past. I think his most impressive thing is just his athleticism. And I look at him and his body type is just sort of something that I haven't seen a whole lot. Even for a safety, he's just got like really long arms and like very broad shoulders and just and sort of an athletic freak out there. I think that sort of runs in the Edmonds family. You know, he got hurt last year. I don't think he had as strong of a season as he wanted last year, certainly in coverage in some aspects. Got hurt at the end of the year with a shoulder surgery, had to miss the last couple years. But the year before that, I thought he was one of the best safeties in the ACC, up there with Derwin James and Quinn Blanding of Virginia. Maybe they didn't quite get the due that those guys did, but I thought he was every bit as effective on the field as those two.
Another guy on defense who I expect is going to see a lot of draft interest is that defensive tackle, Tim Settle. Boy, is he a big mountain of a man.
He used to be even bigger. He came into Virginia Tech at 360 pounds.
Was he?
And, he redshirted that first year, and you know the coaches basically told him, like, listen, you can't play at 360 pounds. You'll play one play, and you'll have to come off the field. To Tim's credit, he got down to 330 in that year. So, I mean, he cut 30 pounds from his freshman year to his redshirt freshman season, and it showed up on the field. He could actually go for a few more plays, and then as a redshirt sophomore sort of had his breakout year.
How much of a concern is it, though, that he can maintain a specific weight at the next level and his conditioning will stay intact?
You know, I think it's always a moderate concern with a guy of that size. I think in Tim's case, he's very motivated by what people think about him in situations like that. He was a guy coming out of high school that I think scared off a lot of programs in terms of qualifying for college. He was sort of on that borderline of Virginia Tech. Went with him, and he, you know, he worked really hard to qualify and not go to prep school before that, when a lot of people didn't think he could. I think a lot of he feels the same way about his weight, where a lot of people are like, well, he's never going to get his weight down. And you know, Tim's a big guy; he's never going to be svelte 250 or anything like that. I mean, he's a large guy from a large family, and he's going to be that big. But you know, I think even at the combine, he got down to maybe 325 or something like that. I think he can play at that size because he's got unusual quickness for a guy that big. So I think he can maintain it over time because I think he's properly motivated to do that. But I would agree that probably is a concern on him going into the draft.
I want to flip it to the offensive line because we're told that interior offensive linemen, you know, there are guys that could be third-round picks who are going to have make it grades, and one of those guys might be Wyatt Teller, who, you know, has done a pretty good job for that program.
Yeah, he's been their best offensive lineman for basically the last 4 years. You know, it was sort of a question. He moved over from defensive line originally, and it was a question of how quickly he could pick it up. You know, when the coaching transition happened from Frank Beamer to Justin Fuente, I think there was sort of a little bit of a concern about how to reach him and how to coach him. You know, he's spoken about how the fact that he has ADD and is sort of not focused sometimes and it's tough to rein in. I think the new coaches eventually found a way to reach him and sort of get him to focus in on everything. And his game really took off. He was a first-team All-ACC guy last year. I want to say had as good or close to as good of a season as a junior and didn't get that recognition. But he's been the offensive line MVP on this team for the last 4 years. Really has a strength component. I mean, you look at his arms, they're just massive. I honestly think he could be a professional wrestler if he didn't get into the NFL on this. He sort of has that personality to go with stuff. But he was a very solid guy for the Hokies for 4 years. I think could surprise some people once he actually gets to an NFL team.
You like him better as a run blocker or pass blocker? I mean, I know he's an interior guy, but they got to pick up stunts when they get to the NFL.
Yeah, definitely a run blocker. He can move. I wouldn't say mobility is his top thing there, but he is a powerful guy. I mean, he put a lot of defensive linemen on their backsides in college, probably more suited to a run-blocking style scheme than a pass-blocking.
Andy, it's interesting you brought up that he was dealing with ADD because everything I've read is a lot of scouts who have watched him have said there was a noticeable difference in terms of his consistency from 2016 to 2017. So, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you think it had more to do with maybe the medical condition and not being motivated by the coaching staff as opposed to his actual skill set?
Perhaps. I mean, I think he's just a guy that sometimes was sort of in and out of it mentally, and maybe that does show up on the field a little bit. But, I mean, when he's tuned in and when he's all there, I mean, he was by far their best lineman and by far worthy of a first-team All-ACC pick. I mean, I think he got the second most votes for the Jacobs blocking trophy, which is something the coaches vote on in the ACC. So certainly is you know, the coaches think a great deal about him and is somebody they had to think of every time they lined up against the Hokies offense.
Anyone else on the squad that we haven't touched, do you think could be a sleeper that might find themselves in contention for an NFL roster?
Yeah, there are a couple of cornerbacks, Brandon Faison and Greg Stroman. Those were veteran guys on this team last year. Faison's a little bit taller. I think he's like 6'2", 190, maybe 200, somewhere in that range, sort of a bigger cornerback. Sort of burst on the scene and had injury problems over his career.
But he turned it on late and had very solid junior and senior seasons. Didn't get any All-ACC recognition, but probably could have. He didn't really have any interceptions or anything like that, so I think that held him back. Stroman is a guy that's a little bit smaller, and I worry about his size in terms of playing in the NFL. It was a concern when he got to college, and eventually he proved that not to be an issue, but the NFL is a whole different thing. But he does have some punt return skills. I think he had 5 punt returns for touchdowns in his career at Virginia Tech. So he's got that element to his game that if you're drafting him, you're not just drafting to play cornerback. He could be a pretty explosive return man as well.
Well, at 5'11 and in the 4.4s, you'd have to consider they would probably look at him in the slot, no?
Yeah, I think that would be the position that he would have to play the most. I just can't see him on the outside hanging with some of these 6'4", 6'5
sure.
receivers all that well. Even though he did that occasionally in college, it's just, you know, it's a different size and strength component in the NFL that he's just a very slight person relative to those other guys. I worry about that.
All right, Andy Bitter covers the Virginia Tech football team for the Roanoke Times. Andy, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Andy.
All right, thanks for having me.
Focus to Washington. Damon Heward, former NFL quarterback, will join us then. In the meantime, want to try to squeeze in a few phone calls. I know we've been very busy with guests over the last 2 days. You want to weigh in on the offseason workout program, the draft, you name it. So let's get to the lines at 201-939-4513. Joe is in Dallas. Joe, what's happening?
Not a whole lot. Looking forward to getting football season going.
Absolutely. So what do you got for us today, Joe?
I'm a big Giants fan. You know, when I play Madden NFL 18, I only choose the Giants. I don't choose another team. So I just want to give a shout out to all the Giants fans and fullback play. I think all the offseason and the drafts, who we get in number 2 draft, I was almost kind of hoping maybe we could even get a fullback for the draft on number 2 draft. But I think our season has, you know, you look at any Super Bowl we've ever won, has always been built around a sound running game, and I've tweeted out to Shane Smith, and he liked my tweet. You know, I think our season lies on the fullback shoulders, hands, you know. So I kind of hope our play calling is centered around that. You know, we can get all our off-season trades and all that, but Eli's a great quarterback, but he's just not built for 40 and 50 pass yards attempts. So I hope to see hope we get a good fullback game going.
You know, that's an interesting question because, or I should say comment, because in our conversations with Pat Shurmur to this point, as well as new offensive coordinator Mike Shula, that question has yet to come up in terms of do they want to have a fullback on the roster? Now, what I will tell you is, you know this, Dave Gettleman, the new GM, is very much in favor of running the football. And he loves those hog mollies up front. And it's no coincidence that you said the Giants, they had a running game and they had a good offensive line and they had a blocking back in those championship years under Tom Coughlin and also under Bill Parcells. So the question becomes now, do they have a fullback on the roster? Shane Smith is the holdover, as you've mentioned already.
Red Ellison can be used as a fullback.
Red Ellison
so
can be used
one.
As a
and
fullback.
He has connections to Pat Shurmur in Minnesota.
He does.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll be honest with you. If the Giants were to get Saquon Barkley with the number 2 pick overall in the draft, I would be inclined to use some double tight end formations. Not necessarily have a fullback in those sets, but go double tight end and have Ellison just stay in to help out whichever one of the tackles they feel needs a little help. I mean, again, usually you run strong side right, so it's probably going to be that side. But I'd have no problem running out of a single back double tight end set and using Ellison's blocking prowess along the line of scrimmage instead of lining up a fullback.
Yeah, I agree. You know, of course, in this day and age, going with multiple formations and packages is the norm. It helps Eli out. But I kind of remember the fullback plays back, you know, when we won our very last Super Bowl, when we started putting the fullback over the left guard and the right guard and kind of starting one way and then having Brandon Jacobs keep a straight line but going back the other way, you know, running straight into the A gaps. I miss that. You know, it just – it makes the Giants a mean, rough football team. You know, every quarterback, you know, should always take a couple of drives off in a game. And I kind of miss the running style, you know, with the fullback. You know, you didn't always have to try to get secure the outer edge. Sometimes just running straight ahead and just hitting the middle linebacker right in the mouth, you know, was what got us there. We all remember how the three-back package that we had with the Giants in the last Brandon Jacobs style. And I kind of miss those. I miss those plays. And so
I promised to tell Henry Hanoski that you called. He will very much like to hear that.
Okay.
And appreciate the phone call, Joe. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thank you, Joe.
I think the utilization of multiple tight ends is probably the best bet if you want to start to speculate as to how maybe the Giants could incorporate a fullback. I think Ellison's familiarity with Shermer's familiarity with Ellison certainly helps. And
yeah.
Ellison was on the roster last year. His usage wasn't very high because we didn't see a lot of two tight ends. So, you know, this season they could very well go in that direction.
No question. And I know Shane Smith is back. And last year he made the team as an undrafted rookie free agent. And he certainly has designs on making the roster again this year. The question will be, do they want to have a dedicated roster spot for a fullback? It's something we're going to have to check on as we get closer to the off-season team activities.
Well, that's why if you want to utilize a fullback on the roster, you have somebody that can play tight end. You kill two birds with one stone, and I think that warrants a roster spot. All right, let's head back to the lines. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi. Hi, Len. What do you got for us?
Good, good, good. Hey, just a quick comment. That logo on the curtain behind you is classic. It's great to see that.
Well, we figure you would like the old school stuff. That's why we put it up. We put it up just to appeal to you.
That goes back 65 years. It's a beauty. Okay, listen, I like the idea of a fullback on the team. It's just got to be the right fullback.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure we've got the right fullback on the roster at this particular point.
Not sure.
I'm leaning toward Barkley. For a variety of reasons that we've talked about before. And I think he gives us the most bang for our buck, the most value going into 2018. I like the way he was described yesterday by both Jack Ham and the guy from Orlads.
Dan Shunka.
Yeah, as he called him a weapon, and I think that's a good way to describe him. And you can't have enough of those guys. I think if we want to move forward from 3-13, I think he's a guy who's going to get on the field on the first day and give us the most value. I have one concern, and I would really like your opinion on this, about Barkley. Penn State got value out of him. He just got the ball an awful lot in 3 years. I mean, if you combine his carries and his receptions over a three-year period of time, I mean, it's almost 800 times he had the ball in his hand. I don't see anybody else in the draft. The guy from Oregon, Freeman, he's off the charts. He's close, but he played 4 years. But, geez, he's close to 1,000 touches over a four-year period. But 775 to 800 sounds like a lot to me, and you wonder about wear and tear on Barkley already. You guys have any comment on that? Any thoughts about that?
Well, as far as I know, he came through those carries and touches healthy. And if he had been banged up at all or had suffered a significant injury during that time, I would be much more concerned about it. The fact that he's come through healthy is a little bit less of an issue for me because, quite honestly, Len, if he lasts 5 or 6 years and on the back end maybe he loses a year or two, that's not your concern right now, is it?
Okay.
If you can get 5 great years out of him, wouldn't you take it?
Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that.
I thought you would.
We got to
run. Our next guest is on the line, Len. We got to run.
We'll
call
definitely
back
catch up on future shows. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Keep in mind, Saquon Barkley also is a special teams player.
Yes.
So if you're going to utilize him at the next level, you're going to want to balance things out, of course. We'll get more on Barkley in a little bit. Right now, we turn our attention to the Washington Huskies and their prospects. And we are now joined by former NFL quarterback, former Huskies quarterback, and that is Damon Heward, who is also a member of the Washington Huskies Sports Network. Damon, you got Lance Meadow, Paul DeTino with you here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything is great other than the rain out here. You know, this time of year, you watch the Masters and you see people in their shorts and polos, and you're like, is that really the weather in other places in America right now?
Hey, Damon, I can't feel too sorry for you, because here in New York, we've had like 4 snowstorms in the past 4.5 weeks.
Yeah, spring has yet to start here,
right?
So.
Yeah, really, tell me about it.
Well, let's focus on the Washington Huskies prospects, and a guy that certainly jumps off the page both physically and mentally, I would say, is Vita Vea. Quite a presence. His ability to get to the quarterback is extremely intriguing, though. From what I've seen and from what I've read, Damon, a number of scouts are a bit concerned that he hasn't necessarily corrected perhaps some of the technique issues that showed up in previous years. What have you seen out of Vita over the last few years in terms of his progress as a player?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been pretty awesome. You know, just obviously you mentioned the physicality and the size he has. You know, there's no doubt he can be a bull rusher at times and get away from his technique because he's that talented and can get away with it. But, I mean, I would just – the production, and you put the tape on and you watched how dominant he was for us, each year getting better and better and better. You know, obviously the comparisons are going to be to Danny Shelton, who was a top 15 pick for the Cleveland Browns a couple years ago, since traded to New England. I think, Vita is even maybe a little more raw, to your point, but the upside is just incredible. His size, strength, and speed, you know, watching him run sideline to sideline, watching him on special teams, you know, at 6'5", 350 pounds, the way he moves, I don't know if there's a better athlete on the defensive line than Vita Vea coming into this draft here this month.
Damon, is it fair to say that you think he could make a pro team that much better in a 4-3 or a 3-4? He's got that much athleticism and size and power, so much with his package that he doesn't need to necessarily fit into a certain scheme, correct?
I would agree with that, yeah. I mean, he could be a nose guard, or he could be, a 1 technique, a 3 technique, because of his athleticism. You know, he's not just a stand-up plug, you know, fill gaps guy. I mean, he is a guy that is going to penetrate and wreak havoc, and I think would be effective in either particular scheme. I don't think you draft him specifically for scheme. I think you draft him for his ability to not only stop the run, but be an interior guy that can put pressure on the quarterback like he did here at Washington.
Personality-wise, I mean, what is he like in the locker room? What's jumped out to you with respect to that?
Yeah, he's a great kid, always has a smile on his face, was an outstanding student here, really took pride in the classroom, finished with over a 3.0. He was a kid coming out of high school who had some academic issues, didn't quite qualify for some schools because of, I think, he didn't have a foreign language, but really worked on that his year out and got squared away and got accepted to Washington. So, but when he got here, man, he really turned it around, like a lot of kids do under Chris Peterson. You have to, or you're not going to be here. And so he learned to get it done, and I think he's grown up a lot in his time as a Husky, and I think he's ready for the next chapter in his life in the National Football League.
Damon, the numbers I saw at the combine, 6'4", 347 was the measurements that I saw. Do you expect him to play at that weight in the pros, or when he gets up to the NFL, do you think the NFL strength and conditioning guys will try to adjust his body somewhat, and that may or may not have an impact on his game?
I'm not lying when I tell you that at 347 pounds, he's skinny. He's not fat. Adjusted. Our strength staff and what we do here at Washington, no one worked harder in the weight room and doing all that he did here. And he's going to play at that weight and play effectively. He's not out of shape at 350 pounds. Trust me. I got people call me up from the combine, like, I've never seen a guy 350 pounds like look like he could actually gain weight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that is an unusual take on a player. You don't necessarily see that very often. We're talking with former NFL and Huskies quarterback Damon Heward. You could also hear him on the Washington Huskies Sports Network. I want to move to another notable player, and that is Dante Pettis, who has some good family genes, Damon, in terms of his father played Major League Baseball, Gary, his older cousin Austin, who was with the Rams as a wide receiver. He has impressive numbers as a receiver, also very impressive in terms of a special teamer. Where do you see him fitting in the NFL level, especially when you take into consideration his route tree as a receiver?
Yeah, he's a really talented guy, just an outstanding football player. Dante, right away can be your number three, number four receiver. But then what the value that he brings is obviously the special teams. I think eventually he could move up to be maybe that number two guy. He is that talented. But receivers usually take a little bit of time. For sure, just go ahead right now. Put him back there as your punt return guy. He's the best I've ever seen in college football. I mean, he has 9 returns for touchdowns, I think, which is an NCAA record. And just his ability to catch a ball and this sudden movement, like as he catches it. Usually there's someone right in your face right away as you catch this thing. His ability to make that first guy miss, and then he's just a glider. I mean, he just, he covers ground with his long stride. He's just so natural as a punt returner, the best I've seen. And so, he's probably going to be a second-round draft pick if I had to guess. Had an injury at the end of the year. He just did all his testing, I believe, for the first time last week. But, you're getting a real outstanding multidimensional football player in Dante Pettis, who's going to do great things at the next level as well.
What about going over the middle, Damon? So many times we hear about guys who, they're a boundary receiver and they're fine on the outside, but if they got to switch positions or play at some slot or play over the middle, that's going to become a little bit of an issue. Is that a concern for you at all?
Well, I don't know. What would you be more afraid of? Maybe catching a punt with 10 dudes coming down and knocking you in the head, or going over the middle with a free safety knocking you in the head? The guy is fearless.
He is.
I'll put it at that.
Okay.
So, yeah, he'll be fine going over the middle. The kid plays hard, man. He's not afraid of that. He just makes people miss. He never takes that big hit. He's kind of that glider, that is slippery guy, but he's a tough guy too, trust me.
Okay, very good. Because his frame seemed a little slight, and that's why I wanted to ask the question.
I would agree with you, yeah. I mean, you look at him and he's not all rocked up and that and whatnot, but he's some of those guys, just they don't take the big hit,
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Allen was that guy. It seems like Le'Veon Bell's kind of that guy. That just, they're not real big and physical looking, but boy, they never get hit hard. They find a way to just kind of, slithery, and that's Dante.
Damon, I'm curious. You had John Ross a year ago, mm-hmm. and obviously I'm sure he benefited from playing across him. With Ross out of the equation, how did that change how much attention Pettis saw and his production?
Yeah, a lot, without a doubt. Teams rolled up to his side, and, we had a couple other complimentary receivers earlier in the year that, Dante's numbers got off to a pretty good start. And then we lost both those kids, Chico McClatcher, Hunter Bryant. And we were really thin at receiver kind of the back half of the season. And certainly Dante's numbers weren't what they normally are just because of what teams were rolling up to his side and putting their best player, following him around, and did different things to try to take him away. So, and I will also say that we were a team that really leaned on running the football much more so in 2017 than we did in 16 when he had the big numbers. We faced some teams, UCLA, for example. I don't know if we threw the ball 15 times. Their run defense was so bad. Mm-hmm. We ran it 50 times, and that's all we had to do to beat them. So, I think philosophically with our personnel played a part of that. And certainly defenses, were aware of Dante Pettis without John Ross and a few of our other weapons on the field.
Damon, at one time, Azeem Victor was up for the Butkus Award, broke his mm-hmm. leg, has had some off-the-field issues. How has his stock been hurt by those situations? And is there a possibility that he can get things on the right track to where he could be a productive NFL player?
No question. Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a tough year for Azeem with so many expectations, and didn't live up to it. I think the biggest thing that killed him was in the Apple Cup of 2016. He broke his leg. I mean, there was a chance he was probably going out to the NFL after his junior year, and probably would have been a second, third round pick. Mm-hmm. But the injury really set him back in the off season. He lost a lot of weight with it. He couldn't, move and lift weights the way he wanted to. And then, coming back into the season, trying to put all the weight back on, got off to a bad start, got in some trouble off the field. All that being said, it was just one of those years where nothing went right for Azeem. But all that being said, yeah, there's a chance this guy could absolutely, step up and learn from that experience. And I think he's grown up. He's graduated. He's a good guy. He does a lot of neat things in our community. Had a bad year, and he's got his body back in shape. I think he proved to everybody at the combine. Did some really neat things with his numbers, and somebody's going to take a shot at him, and it could pay big time dividends with his potential.
They listed him at 6'1", 240, and ran a 4.72. Those numbers sound pretty good to you?
They sound really good to me. Okay. for a middle linebacker.
Yep.
Who, I know plays fearlessly and loves to hit, and that's kind of what he was known for, was his physicality. I think at that weight that sort of speed, that fit in pretty well with a lot of middle linebackers at the next level.
I guess what I should have said, rather than do they sound good, that they sound accurate to you, is what I actually meant. I wasn't trying to be a wise guy.
Yeah, for sure. 240, that's the heaviest I've seen him, but it's good weight, if he's still running 4.7.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yep.
Another linebacker, Keyshawn Bieria, I know maybe not nearly as much athleticism as the other linebacker that you just mentioned, but, what mm-hmm. type of a role do you think maybe he could carve out at the next level? I know he's projected to go perhaps in one of the late rounds.
Yeah, and I think it's just because of that athleticism is what's going to push him down. This guy's what we call around here an OKG from the Chris Peterson terms, which is our kind of guy. This was a team captain, team leader, did everything, was the go-to guy in the locker room. So this is the captain, the quarterback of your defense kind of kid. I played a lot of football here. I see him, John Timu was kind of that guy 3 or 4 years ago. It was a free agent for the Bears. I think he starts for him now at middle linebacker. Mm-hmm. Keyshawn Bieria is the same kind of kid. Like I said, the quarterback of our defense here the past few years. And just a great, great person, another great student. And he'll play on special teams right away and work his way into the lineup of the team, in my opinion.
Talking with Damon Hubert, former NFL quarterback as well as Huskies quarterback. Last one for me, Damon, and this is also a guy that I think is raw, just appealing because he was a defensive player and then he switched guards to tight end, and that's Will Dissly. What's the upside for somebody like him? His numbers don't jump off the page, but I'm curious from a blocking standpoint, do you see a role for him as a tight end in the NFL?
Yeah, for sure. There's just not enough of the old school kind of tight ends in college football today that
tell me about it.
That NFL teams are looking for him. Yeah, this kid's pushing 6'5", a solid 6'4", I believe would be his numbers from the combine. 260 pounds, pretty fluid athlete for his size, takes a lot of pride in blocking and will be great in the run game at the next level. And, maybe not the freak athlete that, some of these first-day tight ends are, but because of his – well, he'll be a durable kid, but also the flexibility of playing him in the run game and also slipping out for a pass. I see him definitely playing in the National Football League.
All right. Well, Damon Hubert, greatly appreciate the time and the insight, and we'll be monitoring whether or not Vita Vea has the opportunity to put some more weight on as he enters the NFL, Damon. That'll be the storyline we'll be watching.
So. I don't think you're going to need to send him a care package, that's for sure.
Thanks again, David.
Thanks, Damon.
All right, boys. Have a great day.
You too.
See ya.
Former NFL and Huskies quarterback Damon Hubert, Washington Huskies Sports Network analyst as well, going around the different prospects. And Vita Vea, I don't remember ever hearing a guy who's about 355 pounds doesn't look the part. He actually looks rather slim.
Exactly, and I guarantee you that Vita is probably saying to Damon now, I'd like to bring you to the NFL with me so that when I do gain a few pounds, they don't find me.
Correct, exactly, so that Damon can present what he went through during college and how it's not
make
necessarily
the case.
Yeah, make the case.
The case for a few more pounds.
Exactly, for him to go into the lunchroom and pack it in. But we certainly appreciate Damon's insight. So you heard from Virginia Tech, You got Auburn as well as Washington over the course of this program, a number of different prospects to keep close tabs on moving forward as we inch closer. We are nearing that two-week barometer now, Paul. Felt like miles and miles away from the draft, and now we're inching and inching closer.
It's finally getting closer, and you can start to feel it now that the off-season program has started and players are in the building again. That's kind of like when the guy at the Indy 500 says, "Gentlemen, start your engines," right?
Yes. Well, they're blazing ahead as we speak. Real quickly before we wrap up the program, Pat Shurmur spoke to the media during a conference call yesterday, as
yes.
did Eli Manning and Landon Collins.
Correct.
And, you know, Shurmur talked about what his message to the team was as they get started. And even though there's been a great deal of turnover on this roster, Paul, Shurmur still keeps referring to what happened last season and making the team aware that they want to distance themselves from 3-13 as much as possible, whether you were in a Giants uniform and experienced that last mm-hmm. season or you did not experience that last season.
Well, and the reason for that is because he's putting a lot of onus on these players, telling them it's not just up to the coaches to make you better, it's about you guys, yourselves, driving your truck to make yourselves better. We'll help you, you know, as a team, we're going to get better. But each individual player needs to do what he needs to do during the offseason to make themselves better. The coaches can only assist in that. They can't do it for these guys. And I think that's the overall point that he's really trying to hammer home and why he stresses, hey, that's it. Last season, forget it, man. That was not good. You don't want to do that again. Got to build.
Shurmur also confirmed Odell Beckham was present for day one of the offseason workout program. Eli Manning also spoke, and he said that he's started to meet the new offensive linemen, Nate Solder and Patrick Omame, and hasn't necessarily had any on-the-field work. But
I hope he had gifts.
Well, I'm sure over the course of the season he may have gifts, depending on production, Paul. May not jump ahead so quickly. But he did say that the interaction has started with respect to
Indeed.
The offensive linemen, and he's obviously looking forward to jumping right into the new offense, because one of the things that Eli mentioned was he and Davis Webb have been in the facility pretty much the entire offseason prior
they
to
have.
The workout program, and what they had been doing, since you don't have the ability to interact with the coaching staff and you can't get into the playbook, they started studying Vikings film, Paul, from
mm-hmm.
the Vikings last
That's
year,
correct.
Just to get an idea of, okay, these are the types of tendencies and things that we're going to see with respect to this new offense.
That is correct, and final point for me is that Pat Shurmur made it clear, with only Eli and Davis Webb in the building as the two quarterbacks on the roster, they will split all of the work during the offseason program, at least leading into the draft. You don't know what the Giants are going to do, but right now, that's it. Those two guys are going to do everything between the two of them. So there's no third quarterback coming in here, no veteran free agent that's going to sign now and take some of that stuff away. Davis Webb is going to get his share of those reps as they try to coach him up and get him ready.
Now, the one thing I do want to add to that is when Pat Shurmur spoke to the media at the owners' meeting, he emphasized that while Davis Webb is going to split reps with Eli Manning, let's not make it out to be as if this is Davis Webb's pro day, where it's Davis
no.
Webb front and center and they're going to be examining every
unfair.
Single one of his throws. No, because I know the media had been pressing that narrative and that
well.
Storyline about how he's going to be really put under the microscope to maybe dictate what they do with the number two overall pick.
What's a media barbecue without a fire?
Of course.
Come on.
So I'm just throwing that out there because Pat Shurmur went out of his way to say this is not his pro day.
No.
And he the other thing that he mentioned was whether or not Davis Webb was young, old, in between, and regardless of what they're looking at the draft, because like you said, there's only two quarterbacks on the roster, he was going to get a lot of work to begin with heading in to the offseason workout program
mm-hmm.
because there's only so many QBs mm-hmm. that they have available to make throws at this
and
point.
And if they need another arm, Jeff Fiegels will volunteer.
Absolutely. Yes, Jeff has been warming it up. I'm sure you would be willing to maybe throw a few down the field as well. You've had your fair share of reps over the course of your career. With that being said, certainly appreciate all three of our guests. The archive will be up later today, so if you missed any of the interviews, you can go back and watch to get some insight on the various prospects. Big Blue Kickoff Live will be up and running tomorrow. We will focus on Oklahoma, and we'll also focus on a national perspective as well. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.